Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. This has been, since July, Magic and I have been trying to put this together. So we finally got a chance to do it. And I'm very excited about having this conversation with her because she brings much to the table and I am honored to have her here. But first, I want to say a couple of things that I deem very important to my guests as they show up. And it's their time. And Magic and I understand about time. And so it is a precious commodity. And I want to thank Magic for coming and sharing some of this precious commodity with us. The other is her journey, because in that journey, it housed much pain, gratitude, strength, overcoming. All of those things are there. It was who she was that made her who she is. And so I want to thank her for coming and sharing this story with us. Magic, welcome to Threads of Enlightenment.
So much. Glad, finally.
Excellent. Tell them what you have created so much so far. And I know that you have done so much and you have so much. I want you to tell them about the services that you have because of your journey and make them aware of it, because our goal is to point them to that those services so that they can apply and get into your space so that they can learn and be moved and change as a result. Go ahead.
So I'm part of a practice and we are based in Australia, but we service all around the world. And our practitioners, including myself, have had battles with cancer, Lyme disease, hypoxia, coronary heart disease, diabetes. We've got a couple of Hashimoto sufferers on the team. Wow. And, you know, we've all had some sort of chronic illness expression, and that's what's driven me to band these practitioners together and provide services that are holistic. So we treat with holism, not reductionism. So we don't chase symptoms. We don't look at one part of the body. So Hashimoto's, for example, we don't just look at thyroid health. We look at everything in the body and how everything's working together, because that's something that us as practitioners, when we were battling with our illnesses, didn't see. We didn't get. Yeah. People were treating symptoms, were chasing one thing at a time in a very reductionist manner, and that's not how life works. We use the physical, we use the emotional, we use the spiritual. So we really treat, like I said, the whole person, the whole mind, the whole body, the whole soul, all at once. And I know that can sound a little bit like woo-woo in the medical mm-hmm. fields, but really that's what traditional doctors used to do. And I need to say that the word doctor was copyrighted. It was, I guess, trademarked, for want of a better word, back after the Spanish flu. In the early 1920s, the Royal College of Surgeons actually trademarked the word doctor. What it used to mean was teacher. So in Latin, where the word doctor originated, it meant teacher. And it was, your doctor would teach you about how your body works, teach you how the things that you think, that you feel, your energies, you know, your vibrations, your frequencies, everything, teach you how that all ties in to prevent dis-ease or discomfort, or what we now know as chronic illness. So that's kind of, in a snapshot, what we do.
That's good work. I know I am coming from the healthcare piece, if you will. And I believe that with the entrance of the pharma companies, a lot of the physician and that partnership got a little corrupted. And the medical aspect of it moved away from its purpose. I absolutely believe that, Magic, because as you state, the physician is one that is a teacher, an educator, and he or she handled the individual, meaning spirit, soul, and body. They would ask you everything about how was church, how are you doing with that, how is this, and all of that encompass your treatment, if you will, because I came from, quote unquote, a third world country, and we're in a country, and the physicians used to come to our homes and talk to us. So I'm familiar with some of the behavior of medicine outside of Western civilization, if you will. And it is an honor to have someone that is going back, if you will, to the original blueprint as to how it is supposed to be dealing with, because the chronic diseases amongst the world today, diabetes, high blood pressure, all of these things, is not just a physical aspect. There's all the pieces to that. I'm bringing that conversation where you need to change the lifestyle, all of it. Meditation comes into managing your disease and all these different things. So I'm excited about this. But I want to talk a little about you, Manjay, because you are now, this is a beautiful picture that you painted as to where you are, and but I want to know how you got there. Talk to us about your upbringing. This is where I believe I call it the lab magic, where we are first put into a situation, and we have a couple of entities that are vying for your attention and my attention to begin to program us. We have our family, we have religion, we have education, society as a whole. We have all of these entities that are trying to tell us how we ought to believe, how we ought to think. And I personally believe that the invisible fence by which they keep you and I in is called normal. And those that step beyond that fence are ostracized and call all kinds of things. But talk to us about your personal journey. How was your family unit and that upbringing? How did it begin to mold you as an individual?
Yeah, look, my family unit was very fragmented. And I guess the people that had the most influence on my life were in a tug of war with each other. So I had my beautiful maternal grandparents. My maternal grandfather was an alchemist. He was an original pharmacist. So in that, he looked at herbs, he looked at foods, he looked at everything before he compounded a medicine. Okay. His wife, my nana, my maternal grandmother, would, you know, I'd come in with a scraped knee and she would say, let's go into the garden. And she only had like a little kitchen garden. And she'd say, now we need to pick this and we need to put that on that. And then we're just going to rinse it off with some salt water and you'll be fine. No band-aids, no painkillers, no mercurochrome back then. Like none of that. It was herbs, water, salt, go outside, get some air to it, you'll be fine. So they really gave me this grounding into what the earth can provide. Now, then there was my auntie on my mother's side, and she wasn't a well lady. She was a very loving lady. She was my godmother. She was married to a doctor, I guess dictated to by Big Pharma. And so she was on multiple medications. Anything was ever wrong, her husband would put her on a medication. But the influence she had on my life was I would go and visit her and she would say, not how are you? What have you been doing? She'd come up, she'd put her hands on my shoulders. Are you happy? Mm-hmm. Because that's something she seeked. And all she wanted from me was to be happy, whatever that meant to me. So that mm-hmm. was our connection. And even till her passing, she would say, are you happy? Like, chase your happiness. That's what I want for you. So they were the main influences in my life. I also had my paternal grandmother who, you know, came from poverty, from Ireland, and she lost her husband, you know, due to World War II. And so she would say to me, be you. Doesn't matter who everyone else is, just be you. So, you know, these people were around in my early years. Unfortunately, in my teens, they had all crossed over and I was kind of without them. Then there was my mother and my father. My father's way of dealing with anything in life, be it illness, be it unhappiness, be it lack of joy, lack of sense of self, was to drink and smoke. So he was an addictive type person. So there was no raising there from him. And my mother, her passion is to hate my father. So, you know, she wasn't a hands-on mum. I know she thinks she was, but she really wasn't. And her whole thing is, what's in it for me? And understanding these personalities, I'm not putting them down at all, but understanding what they are, what they were, what they, one of them continues to be, is very important. Because what I learned from that was, I am me. I need to seek happiness for me, not for other people. And I need to look at what the earth is telling me. Now, everyone apart from my maternal grandparents was very Big Pharma, doctor says, you know, down that kind of narrative. And that never sat well with me. You know, if you've got a headache, you're not just going to pop an aspirin and hope it goes away. What's causing the headache? And when I would ask these questions, I would get shut down unless I was with my grandparents. So, you know, moving forward into my chronic illness journey, that tug of war was within me. And luckily, it was the natural health side that won out. After I followed the doctor says model for a while and things kept snowballing and getting worse for me, and I went, you know what, this didn't feel right at the start and it still doesn't feel right, and now it's worse, off I go. So that is what, I guess, led me into all my research, into my own healing modalities that I've done for myself and for my family, and it brings me to today. And I really hope that I can honor my auntie and my nanas and my papa and just say, I am happy. And I do listen to my body and I do look at what the earth can provide. And, you know, I am me.
That is awesome. Magic, talk to us. How old were you when you started to exhibit signs of physical changes to, and what was your disease, if you will, that you had to deal with? What was it and how old were you?
So I was in my early 40s when my disease became known, but it had been rearing its ugly head for years prior. So, you know, I spent a lot of time going from parent to parent because they were divorced. And in my early teens, I guess forgot who I was, or probably I didn't even know who I was, but I became anorexic. And I thought I was healthy because I was skinny, but I was a fat, skinny person. So my insides were just getting trashed and I was too skinny. Then I got married, had kids, and of course had to stop all my bad behaviors of anorexic behavior and my drinking that I was doing and put my babies first. And it was then that my body started telling me what the deal was that I had not known for quite a while before that. So, you know, post kiddies, I became super morbidly obese. Now, I'm not a very tall person. So if you've ever seen the original Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, the blueberry girl with little feet and hands sticking out, that's how I felt, right? Yeah. So I was quite overweight, very unwell, going to the doctors saying something's wrong, getting told I was making it up, I was attention-seeking, there's nothing wrong with me. And then it wasn't till my early 40s, in fact, it was right on my 40th birthday, that I started really experiencing some ill health. And I went to a new doctor in a new town and tests were done and he came up with, you have cancer. So that had been in the background for quite some time. By the time we found out about it, it was already at stage 4. And so I had to have surgery. Like, I couldn't waste any more time umming and ahhing about it. I didn't do chemo and radiation. That never felt right to me. So I started down the natural health route. Now, I had other conditions along with that. So my body was really at the point of no return. It was like, if you don't do something, then, you know, you won't have much more time to do something. So, yeah, that's kind of how it all culminated. But it was years of feeling unwell and just not feeling heard.
Yeah. How, as you know, I know this, the not feeling heard, because that is the powerful story that you talk about. Going to those that, quote unquote, are deemed the ones to help you, and you noticing the something within yourself that is wrong. I find that really fascinating, Magic, that you would go to people, especially in the medical field, and you would say, hey, this is your body, this is your, you know this because you're living with this more than they are. And you're going to them and say, hey, I don't feel right. There's something there. And the lack of care. And I tell people, there's a lot of people in the business of healthcare for the business of healthcare, not in there for healthcare, you know, because there's a big difference. And you can see them, the ones that are in it for the business of healthcare are treating you the way you are. But those that are in healthcare, they're like detectives. And they are eager when someone shows up and brings a new case, if you will. And they began to investigate that case and to see what. And so I always try to find that investigator when I was dealing in healthcare, because I was in it, I worked in it, and I saw the ones that are in it for the money, if you will, and how many people died as a result of it. So, not having that voice, talk to me about that, because that is a reality, Magic, of millions of people around the world today. What type of advice would you be able to talk to them and to maybe prick the interest of someone?
Look, it really comes down to, I need to say this, I'm not putting all doctors down. I'm not tarring you all with the same brush.
Yeah.
You know, don't be hating on me. But an example, you walk into your general practitioner or your GP, your local doctor's surgery, okay? And they say, how are you feeling? And you automatically respond with, well, my nose is a bit snotty, my eyes are watering, I feel a bit puffy. You're giving them a list of symptoms.
Yeah.
That, how are you feeling? That's what they want from you. They want the symptom list, but they're not asking, how do you feel within yourself?
Yeah.
And how are you feeling in relation to connection to others, to the earth, to yourself? They're not asking that. So it's the languaging that we've gotten used to people asking and that we've gotten used to answering with that kind of sets the precedent for what happens in that surgery. Now, for myself, I didn't feel heard. Was it all the doctor's fault? No, because I walked in with my shopping list of symptoms and I didn't tell them how I was feeling. I told them what I was experiencing symptom-wise because that's what I thought they wanted to hear. Now, I look at what myself and my team do, and how are you feeling means how are you feeling today? Now that we're speaking, is it sunny? How does that sun feel with you? Is it overcast? Do you have seasonal affective disorder? What are your moods like? What are you connected to? What experiences are you feeling with symptoms? But what connections are you feeling within your body or within your community or within your family? So how are you feeling can, you know, change the landscape of the discussion. So it's not all the doctor's fault. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
For me, feeling misheard and misled and dismissed, that was a big thing because I'd experienced that in my childhood. You know, I'd fall over. Like I said, I'd go to my nana and she'd treat me. I'd go to my father and he'd say, stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about. He didn't care that I'd hurt myself. He didn't care that I was personally and emotionally injured from the fall. He was just like, I don't want to hear you crying.
Yeah.
Okay. So the languaging that we use is important. Feeling dismissed can be a trigger. It can be a trigger from childhood, can be a trauma. It can be a new trauma. So when your doctor or your professional that you're seeing, you feel like they're dismissing you or not hearing you, you have every right to say, hey, you need to listen to me. This is what's going on. I am paying you, or my government is paying you, depending on what country you're in, but I am paying you to listen to me. I'm not paying you to look at your phone or write notes, you know, saying I'm a nutcase or whatever. I'm paying you to hear me. And if I can't pay you to hear me, I'll pay someone else to hear me.
Yeah.
So I think that's some very important distinctions to be made. We see that modern medicine is so linked to big pharma. And, you know, something I tell my clients, I do prescribe supplements very sparingly, but I do. And I say, listen, you know, if I can get a practitioner-only supplement of, what's an example, vitamin D3, for example, I'm going to explain why that supplement is good. It's all calciferol, it's bioactive, it's your body's able to use it straight away, okay? Or I will find them, depending on where they are in the world, an outlet that will sell that type of supplement to them cheaply. They don't have to buy everything from me. Okay. I'm not driven by the dollar of the supplement. I'm driven by their healing modalities and I'm driven by the results they're going to get, not by the supplement. So when you look at doctors who are paid for by big pharma, we're seeing that that balance is out of whack in the equation. So when you are feeling misled, it may be because they wanted to prescribe you something and the prescription was more important than the modality. Yeah. And I think that balance kind of needs to be looked at in anything. I see it with naturopaths. I see it with some functional medicine doctors. You know, I'm not saying we're perfect because we're by no means perfect. But, you know, you really, as client, you have to look at, you know, what is the dollar driving? Is it driving the healing modalities or is it driving the stuff that they want me to buy? And, you know, it probably sounds a bit political and a bit blaming and, you know, all that kind of thing, but it's really not. I think when your practitioner is fully invested with their mind and their time in your case, being that detective, that's great. But when they're fully invested in how much can I make on the add-ons, that's not so great.
Yeah. I've seen both because, again, I've been in there and I understand the mentality of both. But I wanted you to address the fact that the patient has to be empowered to bring the attention to them And sometimes these physicians are, they're on a clock, they're on a 15-minute rotation, a 5-minute rotation, and run into the next room. Sometimes you have to bring them present. Most of them are not there because they're thinking about the other thing. And so you have to bring them in and say, wait a minute, you know. And once you do that, then you can have an honest conversation where they're actually paying attention to you and listening to your need. And then again, you will find out who is governed by, as you dictated, you know, which fence are they on. It's easy to find out. You'll see. So here you are. You've gotten your family, you're locating, you're in your 40s, you're beginning to see the crisis that took place, you're in surgery, you're out. Talk to me as to when you came out of that, and now you're facing this world with the reality of this new part of your life. How did you look at yourself, Magic, and how did you perceive your future with all of this information, because you still have your kids? How did you manage yourself there?
Yeah, look, the first thing I noticed and I had to address was I'd lost my sense of self. So I had to work out, what did I stand for? What were my golden values? What were my shadow values? You know, what was driving me? What were my, I guess there's a phrase here in Australia, what's the hill you're going to die on? You know, and mine was my kids, my family. Like, I will defend them with my last breath.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be there. They are my ultimate hill to die on. So,
yeah.
You know, I really had to learn what I was, what I meant, where my place was in my communities, where my place was in my family. And a lot of that, I guess, was lost. So prior to this monumental time in my life, you know, I would go on a plane with my kids, for example. And, you know, the stewardess is talking about when the mask comes down, you put it on yourself before you put it on the kids. And that would actually make me angry.
Yeah.
I would get enraged and I'd be like, no way in hell. I'm putting it on my kids. They are the most important thing. And it wasn't until I nearly lost my life from the cancer and the other conditions that I had that kind of moment. And I went, ah, I get it now. If I don't put the mask on me, I can't help the kids. So, you know, this was probably one of the biggest learnings of I matter. I come first because these people depend on me. And if I don't put myself first, I can't serve them. So that was a little, really big learning point in my life.
Talk to us about that particular journey right there. Because, you know, we have a tendency where we would gloss it over quickly. But that space right there, Magic, that's what we're talking about. That's where you begin to identify who you are, your weaknesses, your strength. And in many cases, we don't know who the heck we are. And so we are on this beginning of this journey now. And I call it that's where that same space that you just mentioned, Magic, is what I call the beginning of our enlightenment. And enlightenment to me means that you and I have the opportunity to become better students of ourselves. As we begin to learn about who we are, I believe enlightenment comes in, the realization, like you receive that enlightenment. Ah, I understand the principle by which I need to put on the mask first and what it does. And so right as you were there and you talked to us, because this aspect of loving the self is a powerful piece, because a lot of people, the reason why they are where they are is because they haven't started to love themselves. Talk to us about that journey, Magic. What did you recognize, those thought patterns that you allow to give permission become monsters? How did you begin to deal with some of those?
Yeah, look, some of the thought patterns that I identified at that time that were going on in my mind was, I need to be quiet. I need to be seen but not heard. I need to be of service to other people. You know, certainly for my kids, it was my kids come first. So if I don't eat, because we'd just separated from their father and gone through a nasty divorce and, you know, times were tight. If I don't eat, that's okay. As long as they have full bellies, that's what matters. Or if I don't sleep, that's okay. As long as they're sleeping well, that's all that matters. And, you know, that was a big period in that time period of my life, but a lot of learnings coming with, okay, I need to sleep so I can support them so that I'm healthier, so I can support their health and yes. their mindset and their personal growth. But in order to do that, I need to know what health, mindset, and personal growth are for me, because I need to be a good role model. So it comes back to me. You know, things like I need to look at my own health and not just be, you know, fixing things that are going wrong as they're happening, but I need to treat the terrain of my body and the terrain of my mind. And I need to now teach that to these two kids. So that was a real turning point. And, you know, it was a point where I guess I had to look back on my life right up to, you know, in my 40s where I was at the time, and just go, I've never done things for me.
Yeah.
This was a big thing. I was always taught, you know, be seen, don't be heard. Ladies don't talk up. They don't speak up. Mm-hmm. You know, again, be in the background. Be a wife. Be a mother. But don't be a woman.
Yeah.
You know, just be of service to others. And, you know, I had a whole issue with my parents. It was be my father's daughter, but secretly so that my mother doesn't find out, and then be my mother's daughter secretly so my father doesn't find out, and be a younger sister to my big brother, support him in what he needs. Never once was it, you know, addressed that maybe my brother could support what I need. It was never a two-way street. So I looked back on 40 odd years of you don't matter. And then I looked at where I was and I went, huh, but I do. And that's great.
Yeah.
Now I can do things for me. And that is actually vitally important, not just for me, but the people around me.
What did you do, some of those things that you did for you that helped you heal as you began to notice those things as they were coming up, dealing with the memory and looking at your parents and how you managed that relationship? What were some of those personal things that you did for yourself in order for you to heal?
Yeah, look, one thing I did was I raised money to go to Bali for 7 days. And it wasn't a holiday. It was a health retreat.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd been away from my kids. Like, they'd been, you know, at Nana's for one night or a friend's for one night, but I'd never been away from them for a whole week, certainly not in a completely different country. Yeah. So for me, it was, I need to do this. I need to give myself that time, that space, that investment of, you know, emotion and feeling and time and love and health and, you know, be immersed in healthy foods. It was actually a fasting retreat, juice fast retreat. So I was able to really take a week to reset myself. And, you know, just a funny story, each morning we would get up and watch the sunrise, and I'd set my alarm and we'd watch the sunrise. And one day, right in the middle of the week, I'd forgotten to set my alarm and I slept till lunchtime. And that was the first time I'd actually ever done that in my life. Because I've always been a, you know, the sun's up, time to get up, get on with life. And I realized I needed that.
Yeah.
I needed that freedom to sleep in, to have that time to myself. It's something I'd never experienced in my life before, you know, without having to get up and go to a job or whatever. This was a whole day where it didn't matter. And then when I eventually joined the rest of the people on the retreat, they went, oh, where were you? I was having a sleep. And they said, good on you. I went, oh, hang on. So I'm not like in trouble because I missed the sunrise and I missed the morning juice and the exercises. Not. They went, no, you did something for you. And I thought, this is so great. Here's a whole group of people that are happy for me that I had a sleep in for the first time in my life. You know, that was a big thing of going there. And once I came back, I'd given myself a precedent of permission to look after myself. And so from there, it snowballed. And, you know, even to this day, my kids will wake up and they'll text me, where are you? And I'll just say, in the bush. I'm out. Yeah. I'll be back soon.
Yeah, I remember that the similar situation, Magic. I was always up early in the morning. And I remember I slept one time until like 9 o'clock. Which to me, you know, like half of my day is waste. I'm like, the day is waste. But I couldn't. I slept, and I remember waking up and the strangeness of that, because I had never in my entire life did that. And to realize that, wait a minute, my body needed that in order for me to be able to manage myself at a more proficient way. And so, yeah, sometimes we need to have those moments where we allow ourselves to be lazy and tell people, you know, learn to forgive yourself, man. It's liberating. It's just one of the most powerful experiences you'll ever encounter in your life. As you begin to work and you begin to take some ownership magic, because it is really a place to be. And I tell people this is where you begin to shift, when you begin to take ownership of everything. And everything is you, spirit, soul, and body. As you begin to take ownership, your life begins to change, because now you're living out of the decision process. You're understanding the power of your decision. You're deciding now your path, whereas before we were just drifting along. Here you are, as you began to decide your path, magic. When you got back from your Bali experience, you began to implement those principles that you learned from there into your life. How did it make you feel once you were away from that beautiful place in Bali and the sunset? Now you're coming back to quote unquote reality. How did you manage yourself and sustain yourself, quote unquote, as they would tell you and I, we're back into reality?
I learned to prioritize things. So, you know, I've taught my kids this, they're now young adults and we all share a house here together. And so I've learned to prioritize things. So I'll say, you know, okay, so the floors need to be mopped. Example, we all have floors that need mopping, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do they need to be mopped right now, this minute, and spotless?
Mm-hmm.
Or can they be mopped sometime this week? And as long as they're clean, not every single mark has to be off the floor, but as long as they're clean, is that okay? It's not a matter of, you know, how can I do a half-assed job, as we say here in Australia?
Yeah.
It's more of, how can I fit this in with me? So if I'm looking at my diary going, I've got so much on with work and so much on with the kids, but I have to mop the floors, when am I going to schedule it? I better get up at 6 a.m. before everyone else and mop the floors then. Or I'll stay up to 11 p.m. after they all go to bed and mop the floors in. No, that doesn't work for me. That running on, you know, my life needs to run task by task does not work for me anymore. And I say mopping the floors because I actually did it yesterday. So it's current in my mind. So what I did yesterday was I went up to my two boys and I say, I need you to stay in your rooms for like 5 minutes. I'm going to mop the floors. I'm going to get as much off as I can see, certainly in the kitchen, I'll concentrate because that's where I drop things all the time. And I need you guys to stay in your rooms. But before I do that, someone needs to go pick up all the cat's toys because we have a kitten, and someone else needs to sweep. Now, when I hear that the toys have been picked up and that the broom goes back away, I'll know it's time to mop. Cool?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was a Sunday. It took us all day to get it done. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't 7 a.m. we need to mop the floors now. You know, it was when all these precursor activities are done, oh no, I can mop the floors, then I'm going to need you to stay in your rooms for 5 minutes. So it's, I guess, taking the pressure off tasks that we need to do. And that's something I learned with my health battle. And that was, I used to be, you know, we call it an A-type personality. But I do this and this and this and this and do it now or do it yesterday.
Yeah,
I don't do that anymore. You know, as long as things get done, and they will get done, I don't have to bust my guts trying to get it done. I just need to trust that all the pieces will align and it will happen. And if it doesn't, if I hadn't gotten around to the floors yesterday, I would have gotten around to them today. And, you know, so be it. And you mentioned the word lazy before. I don't think any of this is being lazy. I used to think that, but I think I'm task selective now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know it's a task that needs to be done, but I'm selective on when I'm going to do it, with how much gusto I'm going to do it, or whether I, you know, outsource it. I have two grown kids. I wasn't the one that needed to mop the floors. If I wasn't feeling it, I would have gone, hey, guys, pay you $2, mop the floors for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's learning about yourself, man, it is a powerful journey as you go. You talked about prioritizing. What else did you use? Because, again, we were traumatized and we gravitate to tools as we began to study and expand our understanding of ourselves, which will lead us into other areas. We began to pull on other principles as we begin to expand our knowledge. As you were expanding magic and you're looking, you have your health also to deal with, And we know that you expanded the study of natural cures and so forth. As you are also expanding your information that you're gaining on the natural, how did you, what information were you gaining on your spiritual, on your soul, to help that aspect of you to walk together, spirit, soul, and body?
I did a lot, actually. I, you know, looked at all different healing modalities like sound baths and, you know, shamanism and all those kind of things. But something that was really important for me personally and professionally was getting my coaching certification. So when I did that, and I've actually done it 3 times now, when I did that the first time, I was learning tools to unlock, I guess, the mind and the habits and my sense of self from within, my limbic system. And, you know, that was a big thing in my progression. Like I said, I've done it 3 times because each time I do it, I unlock a little bit more. So that was a really big thing, seeing how much my mind played in this whole situation.
Yeah.
And now I specialize in the PNEI of trauma with my clients, and I can unlock the feelings and detach the feelings from something that happened to them, you know, when they were 3 or 5,
yeah,
and kind of let them give them the tools, I guess, for healing. And give them the permission, or give them the tools to give themselves the permission to heal from that trauma. Because I think something that I found out and something I see a lot of my clients dealing with is XYZ happened when I was 5 or 6 or 10 or whatever. And all my life I've avoided being in a situation similar. Why do we avoid these things? Because they're painful. What is the pain? What are we actually, you know, looking at healing from here? Is it something internal? Is it something we think someone said and we've made it mean something? Like, what is the landscape there? So, you know, my coaching certification was a really big leap forward, and I have done a whole lot of self-development courses over the years. I have to say, you never stop learning.
Oh, no, I think I call it the, once you realize that you're an investigator of the self, you will never stop until you die. And I think even after you die, I think there's more investigation of the self. So I just think that once we are aware of ourselves and who we are and begin that journey, I think it's forever, because I believe that we are that, we're that great, we're that deep, if you will. So as you're moving forward in your life, Magic, you're learning about yourself, you're embarking on all these studies. How did you progress into, I know you mentioned that you had clients and so forth. How did you progress to where you are today as to how did this whole piece begin to be put together? Was it there before you, or did you, were you instrumental in help putting that vision, if you will, together to look at the holistic path versus any other path?
I was instrumental in putting it together. I sat down with one of my very best friends who's also a practitioner, and I said, how do we, all the things that we've learned, how do we put these things together? How do we make it so that, you know, we help our clients blossom as we've done over the years, but how do we make that easier for people? And so that's kind of how that developed, and our practice developed that way. You know, I liken it to an oyster diagram. Okay, so you know when you're looking at clip art diagrams and things like that, smart diagrams on Word, and there's one and it's like a little circle, and then it's got a bigger circle, and then a bigger circle, and it just keeps growing. That's how I see our treatment plans. That's how I see our lives of we start with this, you know, tiny little speck, and then we build on it and we build on it, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So that is how we built our practice and how we've built our programs for our clients. And, you know, like I said, it's pulling all the things from everywhere that we've learned and continue to learn. And our latest addition to that is, you know, I've been teaching my clients about removing toxins and about making sure that, you know, if there's food shortage, and I'm not going to get into the whys or wherefores of that, but that you can provide for yourself and provide for the people that you love. So I went and did my permaculture design certification. So now I will be talking to clients and I'll be saying, you know, I want you to reduce the toxins, stop getting conventional fruit and veg and go organic. And they'll say, oh, organic's so expensive, I can't afford it. Grow it, do it yourself. Yeah. And I'll talk them through that. And, you know, that's just, I guess, an extension of the things that I've learned.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, it comes back to me. I wanted to feed my family healthy food. I wanted to feed myself healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to pay $12 for a lettuce.
Yeah.
I can pay $1 for a bag of seeds and grow it and then get to the point where I'm calling on my friends going, hey, who wants lettuce? I've got too much of it. So, you know, that's part of life. We keep learning, we keep extending. And I think, you know, to your listeners, the message I can say is you never stop learning, never ever. Yeah.
It's a great journey to be empowered with knowledge as you're moving through life. And it is, I get excited about learning. And as you said, I usually, in every place that I move and live, I would always have a little garden with my herbs and stuff like that. I used, when I was had the house, I would plant potatoes, and I got everything from my backyard, most of the type stuff that I would eat. So I enjoyed that, and I actually would tell anyone, if you have some space, even if you're living in a city, there's ways by which you can grow your things and have access to it. And it's fresh. It's organic, if you will. And so, where you're able to have more of control of your body as to what you're putting in, and you'll be excited with it too, because it, for me, it was an excitement to get a chance to plant them and watch them grow and nurse it and stuff like that. So there's some beauty in there and lots of principles within that aspect. As you were given birth to this magic, and I think your services is such a need. Let me just take some time here. Anyone that is listening, and everyone that is listening to us, get in touch with her, because she has information and she has a team that can be at your service for whatever this is that you are going through, hereditary, whatever it is that you are, you find yourself and your family dealing with. Here is a team that is ready and available with for you, that is able to bring another perspective into your care, if you will. Right now, you may be in the hands of your physician with the pharma, the big pharma guys, and there's nothing wrong with that. Magic and her team will provide a different perspective, gain information from her and her team that has been through many of those things that you're going through, and so that you can have a little more knowledge from those that are medically equipped and trained to see it, and that are, as she stated in the onset, are the teachers, but the teachers coming from a different perspective than that you're in. Get in touch with her and her team so that they can guide you and bring you forward. So, Magic, talk to us about some of those. Pick out a situation in a family, one of your clients that came in into your space, and you were able to, with the different perspective, educate them, and how, when they saw it, as you said, you know, when you understood the principle about putting your mask on, and when they saw it, that it made them shift from the system that they had put in their faith in to now seeking and growing in that holistic arena.
Yeah, look, I had a client come to me, oh, I think it was about 3 years ago now, and not even sure how she got in touch with me, but immediately I was still doing site visits then. It was before the world kind of went a bit nuts, and I had a clinic as well. And so I went and I met with her, and I automatically said, so you've got XYZ condition. And she went, no one's ever told me that before. They've just told me I'm big because I eat too much or I don't exercise. But, you know, her legs were like a meter in diameter each.
Wow.
And it was through treating her and teaching her, and, you know, really supporting her with what I'd learned, that, you know, I can now say 3 years on, she walks her dog every day. She has her own clinic treating the condition that she had, and she specializes in that. That's her niece. Wow. And yeah, and, you know, she's just doing great things. You know, I know I'm kind of snowballing this into one tiny little package, but,
yeah,
you know, this woman was denied by everyone, shunned by everyone in the health industry, both alternative and traditional. And she was blamed. She was victim blamed, and she was told it's idiopathic, which means of no known cause. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't until we got together and started actually looking at what it was that change happened. And like I said, now 3 years on, she has her own clinic. She's doing great things for people. We still talk on the phone quite often, you know, and on Facebook and things like that. And I'm just so proud of the things that she's accomplished. And she has her life back, and she has, you know, a couple of grown kids, and she's able to go out and do things with them. Whereas before, she used to say, you go shopping and, you know, here's my card. Just get what you need. I can't walk around the shopping center. So, you know, now she goes out and, yeah, she's doing great things. So, you know, I'm really grateful and blessed that I have these people come into my life, and I've learned a lot from working with this lady myself. You know, I've learned about personal resilience, and I've learned about, you know, don't take no for an answer. And, you know, she's taught me as much as I've taught her.
That is awesome. I love those type stories. I'll give you guys one that I remember as Magic was talking. I remember taking my son to a hospital one time, and he had injured his arm. And they were dealing with him, and I stepped out of the area where we were, and we were by, of course, in the emergency room. And I was where all the physicians and nurses were meeting by a little area. And I saw them, this particular one, my gaze was drawn to him, and he's desperately in the book, just turning the pages in this book. And I'm looking at him, and it dawned on me as I'm looking at this guy desperately looking into this book that, wait a minute, they don't all have the answers, because we put these guys and these you know, physicians, our doctors, the guys and the women, we put them on a pedestal where we surrender our care to them once we walk into their space, if you will. But I like what you're doing. They may come surrendering, but you bring them into it and saying, wait a minute, we have to work together to get you to where you are. And I remember looking at this physician losing his mind, trying to find something. And today I know many of them, I've seen him, will get on their phone and start Googling things, and they don't have a clue about anything. And so it's good. It's refreshing to talk to someone like yourself, Magic, that is bringing a different perspective, a holistic approach. And the holistic approach, guys, is not just the physical piece or the title of, you know, just holistic in medicine and whatever. It's holistic in your thinking. It's in the approach. Meaning your spirit, you know, everything that you are is a part of the process of your healing. That means your soul, everything, inside out. And so, again, I've mentioned this fact that she has her team, and I admonish you guys to get in touch with Magic, get into her space so that she can bring you that other perspective, because I believe it is the right way to practice medicine. And it is a space by which she had mentioned earlier, where you get to be taught, where you get to learn the effectiveness of you in your healing. Magic, thank you so much for coming to Threads. This has been a long time in the making, and I do appreciate your wisdom, your knowledge, and I want to continue our relationship so that I can be taught how to live and manage in my life as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm glad we finally got to have this chat. And, you know, to the listeners out there, I can say, you know, be kind to yourself, be kind to the people around you, and, you know, just really look at yourself as part of a whole. You are a whole person, but you're part of a whole community, part of a whole family, part of a whole friendship base. you know, you're always learning and you're always growing.
Thank you so much.